Good afternoon. Is it? Good afternoon, all, everyone. Again, thank you for coming out today to support the Forward Together movement in its eighth day of action. We 7 days of action, 1 day of prayer. So we've got 8 days that we've been had the privilege of being here at the seat of government for the state of Wisconsin, bringing our issues forward and our positions on particular policies that are in place that have been enacted by Wisconsin state legislatures and signed in by our governor. I'm gonna start this day off the way we've done in the past. Dr. Bob will send us a document every morning with today's activity. And with those activities, he always have a prayer. So I like reading his prayer. God of love, mercy, and grace, we gather today understanding that there is more that unites us than divides us, but that fear often rises up to stand in the way of the beloved community you intended. You have placed on this earth more than enough resources, talents, and gifts to carry for each man, woman, boy, girl, and otherwise identified human beings. Heal us from the pain and injuries of the past. Embolden those on the margin and bring compassion to the hearts of those who hold power. Help us, Lord, move from a politic of fear, lack, and greed to one of common good. Amen. I'm going to do what I've all done all week, is turn this over to our Wisconsin State Political Action Chairperson, Mr. Greg Jones. Give it up for Greg. He has been more than I ever met.
Thank you, First Vice President. And let me just recognize that two things. Number one, we have with us today Brother Frank Humphrey, who served in many different capacities nationally, at the state level, and locally for the NAACP. So let's give him a round of applause for joining us today. Today's theme, voting rights, vote your dream. That is so compelling about where we are today facing many states. We're gonna hear more about this voting rights discussion, and we're gonna lift voices in promotion of voting rights. We have with us today as speakers, Sister Tish Miner, Third Vice President of Milwaukee Branch of the State Conference NAACP. Patrick Barrett, who is co-chair of the Forward Together Wisconsin Coalition. And on behalf of the coalition and all of our members, we welcome you here today. But as usual, we're gonna bring forth our granny, raging granny singers, get us started with a song of high hope.
Legislative plots to take our voting rights away. Our mothers fought to vote, and now we fight again today. Not one step back, no way. Voting's how we make our choices. Voting's how they hear our voices. We want a true democracy with voting rights for all. Not one step back, no way. In time when owners rule the land, when women, blacks, and poor folks from the voting booths will land. But this is our democracy, and this is our demand. Not one step back, no way.
Join us!
Voting's how we make our choices. Voting's how we hear our voices. We want a true democracy with voting. Early voting, but that is the only way for some folks to have a chance to vote and have their say. Manipulating voting, how they take our rail away. Not one step back, no way. Go.
each and every one of you for all that you've done over these past 8 days, and we'll hear more from them later. What we want to do today is end our program early enough so that we can take advantage of an invitation from the Solidarity Singers. They've asked that we try to join them about 12:45 in the rotunda. Following those songs, we'll then come back to our spot here and around the Capitol in commemoration, celebration, recognition, the March on Washington this day in 1963. But let us begin to lift our voices on voting rights. We're going to begin with the third vice president from Milwaukee chapter, Sister Tish Miner.
Thank you. It is a privilege to be here today to talk about voting rights. Can you hear me? Okay. The right to vote is the most in our democracy. Wisconsin was one of the first states in the Union to guarantee the right to vote for all citizens, with the Supreme Court, which the Supreme Court established in 1866 in Gillespie versus Palmer, that the black citizen, Gillespie versus Palmer, that black citizens had the right to vote in Wisconsin. Guaranteed and protected by the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment, and by Article 3, Section 1 of the Wisconsin Constitution. That right has been cherished and protected in Wisconsin even during the period after Reconstruction, when many states, particularly those in the South, enacted provisions specifically designed to suppress the rights of African Americans and other minorities to vote. In 1866, the Wisconsin Supreme Court protected the right of Ezekiel Gillespie, a black man, to vote in state elections. But in 2014, the unfortunate effect of the Supreme Court's decision upholding Wisconsin's voter ID law would be to impact the rights of hundreds of thousands of minority and low-income voters, elderly and disabled persons, and students. Evidence has shown that the reasons given by proponents for enacting the law do not hold water. It is no different than the post-Reconstruction voter suppression laws. It is Jim Crow revisited. Might I add that these are, ways for people to say, well, I'm not personally discriminating, but because of your privilege, you are enacting laws that suppress other people's access and block their access to the full ability and full right to vote. The important thing for citizens and voters to know is that at the present time, voter ID is still not in effect in Wisconsin elections, as United States District Court Judge Lynn Edelman found this ugly tactic of voter suppression to be unconstitutional. That decision has been appealed, and the case will be heard September 12th by the 7th Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. We are confident that the appellate court will uphold Judge Edelman's well-reasoned decision. In the meantime, may we make every effort to educate citizens about the political process, the upcoming election in November, and pertinent issues. Assist with registering as many individuals as possible to exercise this most sacred right. Remain vigilant in continuing to vigorously oppose all efforts to reduce access to the ballot and opportunities to vote, including felony reenfranchisement. Okay, once you're out of jail, you should be able to vote. Okay, collaborate with our parents, collaborate with our partners and allies in these efforts. Securing the right to vote was a priority of the NAACP when it was founded in 1909, and it's one of the five great game changers of the organization today. The national organization, the Wisconsin State Conference, and all units are steadfastly committed to this end. I'd like to say that this is a comment, is a paper written by Milwaukee branch President James Hall, and he wanted me to deliver this message today. Voting is the most, what do you say, man? Voting is the most powerful instrument ever devised, I love it when I read that, for breaking down injustice. Thank you.
Thank you, Third Vice President Tish Minor. That was a great, great tell, your president, my president. We had a conversation about him. He wasn't able to come today. He had planned to, but he called and said that his able Third Vice President would deliver the message, and she brought it home, didn't she? Let's give it up for Tish Minor, and thank the Milwaukee branch for all of your support. I believe Greg, our political action chair, has been the, he's been carrying this load all week. We don't have an agenda today. Following Tish is Greg. Thank you, Frank. Boy, I tell you, my political action chair didn't give me an agenda. All of you, and I'm saying this to everyone, but to all of you who've been here for 8 days, we can all say, and I missed two of those days, I believe, that if we had not had this man and the Dane County branch to carry this load, this Wisconsin's 8 days of action would not have been the success that it's been. So I want to say thank you, Greg. I've made some good decisions and I made a lot of bad ones in my life, but when I asked Mr. Jones if he would chair our political action committee for the state of Wisconsin, I made a good decision. And you can give me an applause for that. Without any further ado, Mr. Greg Jones, the political action chair for the state of Wisconsin, political action chair for the Dane County branch, and who knows what office he's gonna hold in November when they elect their offices. So thank you, Greg. Thank you. Get this picture.
I need this picture.
Well, good afternoon again. The Dane County branch of the NAACP and member of the Forward Together Wisconsin Coalition makes the following remarks about voting rights. On June 25, 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the pre-clearance section of the Voting Rights Act. There was a case called Shelby County, Alabama versus Holder. And how many of us kind of tremble when we heard Shelby County, because we remember Birmingham. And we ask ourselves, back in the day when Birmingham and the sit-ins were going on, and then the day moving forward when Birmingham, a part of a lawsuit that says, we no longer need to submit modified laws, practices, and programs for our elections, because we think we've overcome. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed with them and said, because there's been so much growth in minority elections or elected minorities and an increase in voter registration among minority groups, we don't need these kinds of formulas to determine who should submit plans for a law change, policy change, or program change. They ripped apart, I believe, was the fundamental component that increased rights and responsibilities, opportunities and options for people of color. That is going to be an ongoing battle for us who are in the throes of voting rights recapturing, is what I like to say. As a result of that, Senator Leahy from Vermont and Representative Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin took the lead to develop and introduce legislation called the Voting Rights Amendment Act of 2014. But they knew it could only go so far. When the court said the number of states no longer need to submit their plans to the U.S. Department of Justice for approval, they also changed the number of states requiring some type of oversight. So the game has changed, big time. I submit to you today that what the NAACP has done at the national level, and I'm going to ask our coalition to get involved in this, is implement what's called a vote watch program. All local units to get involved with identifying, querying, questioning, and recording the comments, positions of our congressional appointees. Each branch is expected to meet with those representatives and senators, ask them their position on the Voting Rights Amendment Act, record that information, and submit it back to National. I'm pleased to say that here in Dane County, we've halfway completed our task along that project. But I'm also here to say that one of the ongoing features of the state political action team will be to cover. Now imagine this. For our representatives in Northwest Wisconsin, where we don't have a branch, we're gonna ask Frank to go and talk to them. For our representatives up in Northeast Wisconsin, where we don't have a branch, we're gonna ask Brother Wendell to go and talk to them. But essentially, we'll find a way to reach out to those individuals either by phone or in person and find out their position. This is a critical piece of information. If this tactic works, our national office will be able to go to those individuals in their office in DC and bring pressure. It's going to take pressure. And lastly, here in Wisconsin, once that pre-clearance section was struck down, and to an extent before, we saw changes in voting and election laws that affected and will affect our citizens unless we take action, lift voices, and challenge them. When we find that the governor signed legislation to tweak or change the law, those changes get implemented, and then when the rules to implement that law begin to be debated, discussed, and completed, they change. When this idea of cameras in the polling place came into being, it was not in the legislation that was passed. It was in discussions among many of our elected individuals from Wisconsin. We have to be vigilant when it comes to laws and rules that are written affecting this type of the voting rights. If we're not, I think we'll wake up and find that this day has changed like it did last year, June 25, when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the pre-clearance requirement. The last thing that I want to say about voting is this, and I believe this. Everybody here is a registered voter. Everybody here, or at least 90% of us, can become a special registration deputy in the municipality where we live. And everybody here ought to walk with registration papers in their pocket, so that when you meet someone and ask someone, like I did the other day to a young man, have you registered? And he asked me, what's that? I explained to him. Then he said, well, if I knew that, I would. So we sat down, filled out the paperwork, and got it registered. This is this conduct of how we approach registration is really gonna depend on how much we reach out to people and tell them why it's important. And this has got to be an ongoing issue for us here in Wisconsin through October 15th, when these special deputies complete their task. So talking about voting registration, the two things, voting, I just want to leave you with two thoughts. Number one, if we don't vote, we have no voice. Number two, if we do vote, we got to find a way to bring others in there with us. So I am so glad each and every one of you decided to be here today, and I'm going to be gladder, if that's a word, when we see the numbers in Dane County for registration for our young voters go up, and when we see the numbers of our young and old and mid-aged people voting goes up. So let's make a commitment today that our efforts will be all geared toward increasing the numbers of registration and increasing the numbers who go to the polls. So thank you a lot.
That's the picture. Thank you, Greg. Okay, listen, I just need some feedback. Did we make a good choice when we asked Greg Joe? Huh? We've got a political action chairperson who knows the game. He's in the game. Now, I have, you know, this is my moment of privilege. I've had some good times in my life. I've met some great people along the way. Some really great people along the way, and I need everybody's attention for this one. Even Greg Jones, I need your attention now. I met some great people along the way to this day. And the person I'm about to introduce now, I did not know years ago in 1998 that I would ever meet a man named Patrick Barry. In 1998, I'm going to share a little bit of my history with you. We have a few minutes. In 1998, I decided to challenge myself and go back to school to deal with my literacy problem. I met a man named Jim Barrett, who was my teacher, who sat me down and said, "Wendell, make it like this, do it like this." And he knew why I was there. I wanted to become involved in my community to try to help move us along in a positive way. At some point after about a year, a little over a year, Jim said, "Wendell, I know you want to get into politics and the clock is moving. So it's time for you to come out of this nest and go on out in your community and go to work." I was afraid, but I took his advice. Jim passed. I was fortunate to speak at his memorial, and I spoke there about our relationship, and his daughter happened to be there. I don't know if Patrick was there. But when we came together with the Forward Together movement, Patrick Barrett asked me if I knew a man named Jim Barrett, or if I knew his sister. And when he asked me about Jim, you know, I got emotional and wanted to cry. He said, "Well, that was my father." And being the ham that I am, you know, I said, "Well, it's really great to meet you, little brother." So I tell you this story, and I'm going to relate it to a story I read just yesterday. If you all know anything about boxing, there's a guy named Floyd Mayweather who has made more money and held the title of champion longer than any man in history. And the story in yesterday's Milwaukee Journal, written by Mr. Causey, young African-American male, talks about a conflict that's going on between Money Mayweather and the guy they call 50 Cent. Do y'all know who 50 Cent is? Well, 50 Cent put out a story that if Money Mayweather can read his contract or something to that effect, he would pay him $750,000. The point I'm trying to make is that if you know anyone who suffers from this condition, try and help them come forward the way Jim helped me. Now, did I live up to my promise to Jim? I'm standing here on the steps of this Capitol about to introduce my little brother. Come on up here. This is my little brother. Get the picture, man. Are you a photographer or what? This is my little brother, Jim Barrett. Thank you, Patrick. I love you.
I love you, too. Well, I didn't anticipate that. Thanks for that more than unusually great introduction. I was going to say that I have aspirations to being a raging grandpa someday. But my kids have all been given the instructions that they're not allowed to have children of their own until they're 30, so I've got 6 years at least. Anyway, and I don't have enough hair left by that time to be able to talk about gray hair, I'm sure. Anyway, so voting rights. I just have some comments about this. You know, there was this initiative in this legislature back in March to impose limitations on early voting, both the number of hours during which you can do this, the ability to do it on weekends, and this along with some of the other initiatives that fall into this category seem not particularly significant. And it's easy for most of the public to just ignore it or not even be aware of it. So I'd like to suggest that it's more significant than that and put it into some historical context and why the present is connected to the past. And some of the folks who have already spoken, including the Raging Grannies, made reference to this in their song. These initiatives are really a very transparent attempt to limit the power of voters. And there are particular targets, obviously, behind this. I mean, as I say, it's very transparent. Specifically, you know, poor people, the elderly, people of color, working class people more generally. It's already the case, and as I'll say in a few minutes, that there are lots and lots of obstacles to voting. So this falls into a long, long list that has been going on for a long time of trying to impose obstacles to the exercise of this power to vote. In fact, there is a very long-term anti-democratic tradition in this country of trying to impose limitations on voting, trying to skew the political process in favor of a very narrow and privileged elite so that it serves their interests and not anybody else's. Now, if anybody remembers any of their high school history, they'll recall that those who voted initially in this country were limited to men, people with property, and white folks. And the fact that more people can vote today than that narrow group is not an accident of history or something that was bestowed from above by some benevolent person, but rather was the subject, the focus of a long political struggle, with voting as a key component to a bigger, broader democratic struggle. And it's always been the case, historically, not just in this country, but around the world, that those who benefit most from democracy have fought hardest for it. And those who benefit least from it have fought hardest against it. And that's true in this country. So that those folks who wanted to maintain a very narrow political system, serving a very narrow and privileged set of interests, have fought very hard and often very violently against the fight for the expansion of voting rights. Now, that fight hasn't come easily, and in fact, the Voting Rights Act that Greg made reference to passed in 1965, only 49 years ago, was the point at which the United States finally joined the community of countries in the world that had universal suffrage. Less than half a century of our history have we had universal suffrage. And ever since then, it's been under continual assault. Now, no longer able to openly deny the vote to women or to people of color or to poor people or to illiterate people or what have you, they've engaged in a lot more subtle efforts to do two things. One is to impose obstacles to getting into the voting booth. But the other is that if you make it into the voting booth, to render that vote meaningless. And there have been a lot of measures or initiatives that have been able to make that happen. One of which is the most commonly known is the role that money plays in elections. Speaking of Supreme Court decisions, there's a series of those that have really eliminated the limits on campaign financing that has made it possible for the system really to serve the interests of the most wealthy in the society and to drown out any other voices, however loudly they may be speaking. Another of those is gerrymandering, redesigning districts so that even that majorities don't even get to get representation, skewing districts, and it's not just true of Republicans, it's true of Democrats as well, that most districts in this country are single-party strongholds. In fact, as of the early part of this century, I don't have current data, in state legislatures across the country, nearly 40% of all legislators are unopposed. And most of the rest are uncompetitive, so that everybody knows who's going to win those elections. And consequently, incumbents are almost impossible to dislodge unless they, you know, commit some sexual assault or something like that. So in addition to that, what does that mean for the representation of people? It means that the mass majority of people aren't able to express their point of view. And another one is winner-take-all elections, which makes it possible to narrow our options, not just with respect to candidates, but with respect to the range of policy debates, policy options, the voices that are heard, so that it really limits, even when we're able to vote, who we can vote for, what they stand for. The result of all this is not surprising. The United States has the lowest voter turnout of any industrialized country in the world. Actually, it's declining all over the industrialized world, steady decline. But the United States has the dubious distinction of being the lowest in the rich world. And it's also not surprising that those who don't vote are disproportionately poor, working class, and people of color. And I want to suggest to you that while some of them may be ignorant and unaware of things, most of them are not. They're not stupid, and they're not bad citizens. It's that this is by design, that the system is made in such a way that it's seen as less and less meaningful for them to vote. So in addition to getting people to stirred up to vote and registering them, I want to suggest that we need to democratize the electoral system so that they see it as representing their interests. So I don't think we can underestimate the threat that these recent initiatives like voter ID and restrictions on absentee voting and early voting represent. But I also want to suggest that we shouldn't overestimate what it would mean to defeat those specific things, which need to be defeated. But those were made possible precisely because of the already existing restrictions on the voting system, on the electoral system. And they're, like all those other ones that preceded them, are by design aimed at, as I said, this long-term historical process of trying to restrict the political process and make it increasingly undemocratic and serving a very narrow elite. So it's not just the right to vote, it's the right to vote for something as well. And I think that there's a bigger sort of lesson in all of this. You know, this society has many, many, many problems. And some folks would like to suggest to you that they're sort of part of the natural order, that they exist and they're all, like, the poor will always be with us, that kind of nonsense. I want to suggest that that is nonsense, and in fact, there are readily available solutions to all of those problems. The more fundamental problem is that there's a certain limited number of people who profit off the perpetuation of the problems. They make a ton of money off the existence and perpetuation of the problems, and they in turn have a disproportionate influence over the political process. So if we're interested in advancing the society and implementing solutions that will address the many problems, democracies, more democracy, not less, is the solution. And that's going to require a mobilized citizenry, just like it always has. We need to take a lesson from our predecessors, from our ancestors, and recognize that it's through political struggle that any of this is going to be accomplished. And that's a lesson that I think our adversaries sometimes understand better than we do. And that's precisely why they want to limit the democratic process. So in Wisconsin, just like the rest of the country, we need to move forward together in a mobilized way. And we want to encourage you, we want to let you know that this Forward Together Wisconsin effort, this movement, is in its infancy, but it's going to grow. And we're going to make sure that you hear about us. So forward together.
All right, thank you, Patrick. Okay, on the agenda, I believe we follow the agenda. We're going into the rotunda with the solidarity singers. So we're gonna get the NAACP banner and march into the rotunda.
Number 55. If y'all don't have a copy, it's number 55.
I'm gonna let it shine. Valentine. We can break your hearty power, take our freedom.